welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott take a trip to Piedmont. Well, not literally, but you know, figuratively, as they drink the Michele Charlo Le Orme Barbera de Asti. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight, we have an episode based on a listener request. The listener, we won't name his name, we'll keep him off, but he is on a quest to drink through the entire world, and I approve that quest. Yeah. I think it's a fantastic quest.
It's an idea.
He has drank through Bordeaux, he has drank, now he's in Italy, he's drank through Tuscany, he's drank through all the scent, he is bored with Sangiovese, now he's off to Piedmont. And so he asked if we could do a little bit about Piedmont. We talk a little bit about the Italy's other great wine region. And we shall tonight. I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
Oh, it's good to be here. And I love me some Italian red wine.
You do. And we're not joined by the Triple B because she is busy plotting Italy's demise at the hands of her overlords. But still, she's also still nursing an injury. But the wine tonight is by Michele Charlo, well, C-H-I-A-R-L-O. Please write in because I pronounced it incorrectly. But, and this is their...
Michele Charlo.
I'm just going to say Michele. But anyway, it's all right. Michele. Isn't there a Beatles song, Michele? Doesn't matter. This is their Le Orme Barbera de Asti. First thing, labeling for Italian wine, especially in Piedmont. It makes it very easy. This wine is 100% Barbera, the grape, and it's from Asti. It's a region within Piedmont. Very easy. Now, Asti is a fairly big area. So with this wine, we are not looking at something that is a, think Rhone, for instance. Côte de Rhone. Côte de Rhone Village. Côte de Rhone Village that is a commune wine. We're talking about Côte de Rhone here. That's what we're talking about. The whole place of Asti, this wine comes from. Now, you might see some Barbera de Asti's with a Superiore at the end. That means that they've been held longer, aged longer. They're better. Themselves, though, Barbera is a grape we haven't touched too much on the show, but we do drink it occasionally, especially when we go out to an Italian restaurant like Scally's, something like that. Oh, often, yeah. Frank will have some sort of Barbera-based wine. I enjoy Barberas. They're lively, they're fun, they're fruity. They're a delight to drink in a lot of different presentations that aren't Californian. But
I love a California Barbera.
Well, sometimes, but they make it less and less. You know, Turley should do that. They don't do a lot of Italian though varietals, do they?
Just Zinfandel. There's nothing. Well, there's nothing about that.
No, that's Croatian. We've already talked about that.
Stop.
It is. This is the Vranic grape.
Stop.
But within Piedmont, though, Barbera actually is the most grown grape. Now, it's best known probably for Nebbiolo from Barolo and Barbaresco.
Well.
But, yeah, Barbera is the most planted grape. Then beyond that, you have Dolcetta, which is, I always think it's very, very similar to Barbera in a lot of different ways. I mean, there's some subtle differences, but for the most part, they're both very, very fun drinking, easy drinking pasta wines. That's really what they're great drinking wines with pasta. A Barolo, that's a standalone wine. Barolos can be grand wines, and they can be big tannic wines. Barbarescos, once again, same grape, Nebbiolo. It's a little bit lighter, a little bit more subtle than a Barolo. Still can be ageable, but not quite necessarily with the level that Barolos are. And then other Nebbiolos, like what, Lange? Is that what it is? Lange?
Lange?
Lange.
That's a different region, though.
Yeah. That's, well, yes. Once again, though, still Nebbiolo, But that's actually more Pinot-like than anything. So, and yeah. Honestly, normally the Nebbiolo glasses are a variant of a Pinot glass. Depending. Barbarescos and Lajes, you can do that with a Pinot glass. Barolos, depends on the Barolo. Barolos, though, you might want a little bit different glass. You know, maybe a Syrah glass. Maybe a New World Syrah glass. That's what we're drinking out of this tonight. The Venom Extreme New World Syrah glass, because why not?
What does Riedel recommend you drink a Barolo out of? I don't think there's a Barolo-specific glass.
I think Nebbiolo normally is a Pinot glass, but Nebbiolo comes in different forms and different styles. So, Barolo, a big Barolo, you could even maybe pull off a cab glass.
All right.
You know? But I personally, I don't buy a lot of Barolos. I used to some, but I've drank through all of them. I have not replaced them. My Italians normally stay with Tuscany, and I do a little bit of I have some Barbera de Asti, as I believe, from I can't remember who the hell it is, but I'm more of a Tuscan fan than I am a Piedmont. Really, I love actually Bordeaux blends from Italy. Strangely,
oh, they're nice. They're light. Yeah, Nebbiolo glass, I would guess.
Yeah, it's similar to a Pinot glass. Similar. So, on tonight's show, we're going to enjoy ourselves. We're going to do some Italian wine. This is a very, very, well, a fairly highly regarded wine from, and quite frankly, this producer, Michelle Charlo, has some great wines. Check them out on wine.com. They have a full line, and they really, really go up through the basically everything. Really nice scores, too. I mean, really, really impressive. And it's a screw top, so Scott can open it. So, folks, I know. We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. Hey, everybody. It's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back. And we're back, folks. So, the Michelle Charlo Le Orme Barbera de Asti. Now, this does have a review.
Thank you. This is Wilfred Wong. Scott says wrong, but I'm not. I'm completely right. And I have proof of that. I recorded him telling me I was right. Very right. If you
that's
get
when
my
you were going to turn yourself into the police. I said that's the right thing to do.
You said that's the right man, and you pointed at me. I didn't think that was nice. But anyway, this wine does have a review, but I'm first going to read the winemaker's notes. Yes. So, Michele Charlo Le Orme Barbera de Asti is ruby red with violet hues. This elegant and intense wine offers notes of red cherry and red currants. A harmonious and well-structured wine with a beautiful savory finish, like me. Pairs well with chicken. Why did I click off? Chicken, mushrooms, pork, and grilled or roasted red meats. And is 100% Barbera. Then wine enthusiast. That glossy mag hustler version of a wine magazine. They gave it 94 of their points. That's a lot, Scott. They're a little bit whorish, though. And they wrote, "This is a classic," in all caps, "Barbera. Vibrant and bright aromas of wild berries, fresh herbs, and purple flowers all showcase the beauty of this wine.
Purple flowers.
The palate flowers. Shows high-toned red cherries and raspberries framed by elegant and fine tannins with that perfect pop of acidity on the finish."
Perfect pop of acidity from Barbera, not Oakville Cabernet, Allison Crow. So, I know. I just wanted to point that out.
She's like, acidity, I told you. I knew it.
By the way, Riedel...
You have another pack of cigarettes?
Riedel recommends the Pinot glass, the Nebbiolo glass for the Barolo.
I know.
It was our conversation.
I told you that.
Well, you suggested...
I don't think I don't mean that. That's what you...
You've been known to be wrong.
No.
Acidity is the winemaker. It's not the way it's harvested.
Somebody well, it can be that. A little bit of both. But,
oh!
But on her, do you really think that she deserves any kind of credit? Mm. No. As Maggie would say, no. Stop it. That's right. Stop it, Scott. Stop it. And they do have a website. Oh, let's see if I can find anything on here. Oh, it is. It's a minimum of 16 months refinement before release for sale. I don't know what that means. Probably in stainless steel, my thought. I don't know that they would actually do a lot of oaking with Barbera, because that doesn't really make Barbera better. You know, making Barbera great again, oak didn't do that. Well, at least heavy oak.
But what about acidity?
I know someone would ask me that. It does have sandy soils rich in lime and microelements. And then it's a manual harvest. And it accompanies pasta with tomato, pizza, and certain fish and white meat. Very, very well. That really true. I mean, you can get some spaghetti and meatballs, man. Oh, this is a good wine. I bet it's probably going to be a good wine. We're going to be sad that we don't have some of Frank's tomato sauce and some crusty bread. And so that's what we're going to really, really rue that we don't have that. So, in the glass.
That good red sauce.
It's a little translucent. It's ruby red. But you would expect a little bit of translucent with a Barbera. On the nose, though. Red raspberry. Very bright red raspberry, actually. Almost a red raspberry preserve. Hmm. And then a little bit of an undercurrent of a sun-dried tomato. Just one tomato, mind you. Ooh, a little marjoram. Maybe some thyme. Has a nice herbaceous undertone there. That's
parsley, sage, marjoram, and thyme.
I like the nose.
It's a fairly complex nose for an Italian red.
Yeah, and this is $16.99, folks. So it's not $8. Your cheap wines from Italy, it's not going to normally be a Barbera di Asti. It might be a Barbera. It could be a Montepulciano di Abruzzo, different wine.
You might find a Barbera di Asti at a cheap price. This one's not one of them.
No, this is a little bit better producer.
You can spend more. This, I would call this their entry level, though.
This is their entry level. This is Michelle's entry level here. I'm just like a little bit of a funk. That's Barbera.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
First, wonderful balanced fruit with just a kiss of acidity.
Mm-hmm.
That just, it's like it's ringing in the new year, the acidity. It's just like there. It's just a beautiful thing.
Well, it's a wine that really defines its parts very well. You have the front palate, mid palate. Everything is well portioned, well set forth, and exactly how you would expect it to be.
And it's
the finish is a little bit long, too.
Yeah, and that kiss of acidity is just like a bell ringing in the background.
Yep.
Let's talk about that fruit a little bit. There's a almost like a Pinot-like kiss of cranberry in there that I just love. It's got berry fruit. It's got a little bit of... There's some type of savory
currant.
Fruit element in there. Yeah. It's a one. That's as fruity a profile on an Italian wine I've had in a long time.
But not jammy fruit.
No, but it's... And it's all... None of it's overwhelming or takes over the other components. And then it's there, the front palate goes to the mid palate, and then it's just a nice, long, lengthy finish.
I can see the pairing with white fish right off the bat. Really, if you had like a Caesar salad with sardines on it, because it has a little bit of a saline saltiness to it, a slight bit, in a nice way. Normally I hate that, but I like it in this. And that would really pair well with a lot of different, like, you know, fish. It was just white fish, flaky kind of stuff. Especially in an Italian setting, you know what I'm saying? It they bring out the whole fish. You're picking at it on a table setting. But also you're going to have your olives, your whole, you know, your whole spread right there. And you have this wine in the glass. And it just, it's something that could dance back and forth between those things.
I was going to say the same thing. I was going to say, this is a wine that if you're going to sit down for a proper multi-course Italian meal, right, where you get a primo, secondo, then you major entree, and you're going to have that fish entree. And let's say you've got a little tomato thing going with the fish. I think that would better fit or some kind of braised fish dish. But regardless, you know, this would go well with, you know, a charcuterie dish. It's some kind of meaty, fatty starter. That fish entree you talked about. But this is going to go freaking fantastic with pick your red sauce dish.
Oh, yeah.
Pick it. But you could have this one wine with all of those things.
Yeah.
With all of those things. I mean... Yeah.
It's very versatile.
I love this wine. I get why the enthusiasts were enthusiastically giving it a 94 of their points. Mm-hmm. It's a really good wine.
Well, it's good in the context of what it's supposed to be. So it's like a... I mean, when they said this is a classic Barbera, it is. This is what Barbera tastes like. This is just... If someone was saying, Rob... Hand me a wine that I'm going to know what Barbera tastes like from forever on forward, I would hand him this bottle of wine. Because you have little undertones then of slight leather and through the mid palate. It does all that. It just encapsulates so much of that's Italian. The question you might get, though, is what's the difference between like Sangiovese and Barbera? First of all, ask me, okay, you need to define what Sangiovese you're drinking. Because... Good aged Chianti is mother's milk. Good Chianti that's aged, that is as silky smooth and as delicious as the world is long. It isn't funky. It isn't punchy. It isn't. It's just a wonderful, wonderful drinking experience. It's more drinking experience than it is flavors for me. This one is a little bit of a ruffian. It's an upstart, you know? Barbera can be a little bit chunky. Tastes a little bit more, well... Rough around the edges. Now, Sangiovese, it can be rough around the edges, but you don't... That's not a good Sangiovese. Good Sangioveses are silky. Good Sangioveses are elegant. They really are. Barberas, good Barberas, are chunky, rustic, you know? They are the lesser of the Italian wines, but they're not bad. They're just less expensive. But they're great in that sense. They have simplicity. We're saying that this wine is a great wine because you can taste all the elements and you can taste the front, mid, and finish so well. Well, that's a good thing in a wine, you know? Wines that aren't good are muddled, okay? You can't pick out red currant. You can't pick out raspberry. You can't do that. You can't pick out the leather because it's just all one big muddled mess made by Alison Krauss. So... I'm going to do that every time until she quits. She's my mortal enemy.
She's
now.
Listening to you.
She might be. I'm living in her head rent-free right now. Yeah. Her and her She's squatting someplace. She doesn't have a place to live, probably.
Oh, stop.
It's a shell game, man. Oh, stop. She's a con artist, I think.
Oh, you're a con artist.
Allegedly. Sarcastically. I'm saying it in a character.
She's a con artist.
Yeah. Really, what rings true to me for this wine is Italian wines, for me, tend to show more of an herbaceous note to the mid-palate. They're bright. They have nice fruit. It's not jammy fruit. It's nice and bright. But they show that herb mid-palate, which is so nice. This leather and herb is just such a nice, nice thing.
I think in your higher quality ones, I wouldn't go expecting
that. Oh, sure. No.
In your budget entry priced.
Oh, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about Pablo Scovino Barolo. That's a Lamborghini of a wine. That's what that is. You know, Gaja. Come on, man. Those wines are, you know, when we're gushing over Pone Cane, that's what we're talking about with those. Those things are that. So,
I mean, this wine has
a, heaven forbid I say that,
touch of that.
No.
But you're not going to expect just your basic Italian, whether it's from D'Asti or Sangiovese, to have that. That's more of a higher end.
What
quality?
What quality?
That earthiness you're talking about.
No, I see it occasionally. Now it
occasionally
can be,
but
it can
it's going to be in a higher quality.
Well, it is, but it's more defined. You know, that's the whole point. Yeah, it might be there in an $8 bottle of wine, but you're going to say, oh, it tastes a little bit like dirt. Where this one, you say, well, I smell a marjoram. I smell thyme. I mean, I'm tasting different herbs, and they're coming through. It doesn't taste like dried leaves or grass. No. Well, that's what might come across them, like.
Whoa! Hey, now.
Sorry. Like I have this one, La Feria. It's a Montepulciano di Abruzzo. It has a merry-go-round horse in the front, and it's $7.99. It is in the queue for the wine vault. This will not have those kind of qualities.
No.
You know, but it's $7.99.
You know, I'm wondering, should we do a Moscato from D'Asti?
Moscato D'Asti?
Yeah.
We did. It's called Martini and Rossi the Rocks.
No,
say yeah.
No, a real one.
Oh, you mean a good one?
Well.
Why would you want to do that?
Well. Let's take that tour of Italy.
I mean, you want to drink a Moscato d'Asti?
Well, not really, but I was just throwing it out there.
Because you've drank them before, I know that, right? You need to do it on the shows to verify that they're bubbly.
I'm not a Moscato fan.
You look like a Moscato fan.
Well,
you know, well, you look like a fan of something. I don't know what it would be, but snuff porn, probably.
It's interesting. So
Mexican snuff porn.
Michelle Charlot has a step up. Barbera didn't score as high.
Got 92 from the Spectator.
Didn't score as high.
It's in my queue. It's in my cart. So that means I bought it. It's $28.
25. You buy a dozen.
I'm not doing that.
You get that 10% discount that they're offering all month long, sir.
Yes, so you can do that on 6 either. You can also get 10% off 6.
On 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually holding off on buying that until I drank this.
And he's got that Barolo, you know, the 2017 still out there. That's got some points.
But I'm more, I'm focused more on, if I'm going to buy Barolo, I'm buying Pablo Scovino.
And also, he's got just a straight Nebbiolo. It's not Barolo class, but it's from Nebbiolo.
Lahe?
Piedmont.
It's called Piedmont in general?
It's Nebbiolo from Piedmont. It's a Michel Charlot Il Principe Nebbiolo.
Yeah, that might be okay.
$24.
That's not bad.
Not rated. No ratings of note. Why not?
Well, you know, what is there is a winery in Barbaresco. It's I'm going to butcher the name. I apologize. It's Puttiore del Barbaresco. Is that what it is? I believe it starts with a P. Anyway. The point is, around Barbaresco, there are some smaller growers, and they can't like market their own wines individually, right? So they developed a co-op.
Well, that's a lot of Italian wine sold by co-op and is not marketed.
But that wine label is that co-op, and they make great wines. I've bought plenty of things from them, and I've always enjoyed it. They make great wines, but Scott, can you look that up?
I didn't get a hit on wine.com.
You kiss Italian, don't you?
Yes, I don't speak it, but I kiss that way.
Give me a spelling. P-U...
Something.
Yeah. Something.
You got it. You're all over it. You're all over it, man.
Pucciatore?
Yes, Pucciatore. That's pretty close for me.
And it's Barbaresco.
Yeah, Pucciatore del Barbaresco.
Pucciatore del?
Yeah.
There's Produttore.
No, it is Produttore.
Produttore del Barbaresco. Mm-hmm. Barbaresco DOCG.
Mm-hmm.
Visa wines.
Yeah, they make lovely wines. Gaja
imports. Classic Barbaresco.
It is classic Barbaresco. Right, here's the Michel Charlo Nisa Caprizi Barbaresco. Or Barber. I'm sorry, Barbera. So that's Which not a Superiore, though. That's interesting.
DOCG.
Yeah.
Barbaresco, 100% Nebbiolo.
Pio Cesar is also a good one. I have some of their Barbera de Asti's. And then their Barolo is quite good at $94, but it's quite good. And I just hit my mic with my hat, but that's okay. I'm a professional.
Yes, sir.
Produttore. Yeah, that's what it is. The Barbaresco.
Yeah, they got a Lange Nebbiolo for $28.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Lange, you can buy that at Giant Eagle.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But then the proper one.
The Barbaresco.
Robert Parker, 93. Mm-hmm. James gave it a 93. Wine and Spirits, 93. The Enthusiastic was less enthusiastic. But Wine.com gave it a cellaring rating.
I've had it a few times, maybe three. Always liked it. Always liked it a lot. So, one thing I would avoid, because I don't even know if they do this anymore. What is the Bola? Anything by Bola. Don't buy that. Bola even makes a Barolo. You know, so don't buy $30 Barolos and expect them to be Barolo. I don't care where you do it. No, Barolo.
It gives you a sense of them. I've never had.
Does it?
Yes, I've never had a Barolo that I didn't like.
Man. Here's their Barolo. Yeah. The Michel Chardo Barolo is $63.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's another one. Very nice. And the Wine Spectator gave it 91 of their points. So. Wild Thyme and Eucalyptus highlight the balanced red. That's very, very lovely. Mint, thyme, and eucalyptus. Very interesting. So.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and eucalyptus.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of flavors that you can experience when you branch out. And that's the interesting part when you go into different parts of the world. You know, there's a lot of options. This is one of those things. And this is more of a drinker wine. We like that. A great food pairing wine. And really, this spurs our memories and our enjoyment of food as much as anything. And that's a wonderful thing, especially if you have that food in front of you. We do not. We have Gouda and salami. But that if you had that food in front of you, this would make this wine so much more exciting and enjoyable.
Just a simple red sauce, maybe a little on the spicy side.
Mm.
With some gnocchi. Finish it with some lemon zest and Parmesan.
I don't like gnocchi, but that's okay.
You never had my gnocchi.
Is that a sex thing? Once again, Scott, I never know you. You're actually talking about food?
I make a ricotta flour-based gnocchi that is to die for, sir.
How is it?
Yes, it is.
Hmm. Flour-based, though, huh?
Not potato-based. But the ricotta, it's a Michael Simon recipe.
Oh.
It's freaking delicious.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Freaking delicious. There's a couple different ways you can do it, but I typically do it with not a red sauce. It's freaking fantastic.
What's the sauce then?
So it's like a lemon zest, a cheese sauce.
It's ragu in a can.
No.
It's their Parmigiana. It's Alfredo.
Freaking fantastic.
It comes out. It's like when he dumps it out, it's the shape of the can, and he has to spread it out with a spoon. Yes.
Chef Boyardee. That stuff is so bad.
Yeah. Really, though?
What is the white stuff?
It's sperm.
That's in the Chef Boyardee probably can. Probably semen. It hangs on the side.
Somebody wanked off in a can, and they served it. That's the case.
That's why Chef Boyardee looks so happy on the label.
I'm not so sure. Yeah. That's why you're buying it, probably.
And Chef Boyardee used to make the pizza mix, too. Is Chef Boyardee pizza mix?
Yeah. And it just tastes like a piece of bread with some ketchup. What
was so bad about that was, and thank God they didn't give you more of it. You got like this 3.5-ounce can of sauce that was the worst sauce
ever.
And
the cheese was powdered.
Oh, God.
Sprinkle. It's ketchup bread with shitty Parmesan on it. It was awful.
You're supposed to be able to knead it and roll it and make it fill the whole pizza pan. It never filled the whole pizza pan.
That's why you use an Easy Bake Oven. Yeah.
Well. It's ketchup pizza.
My kids probably would have eaten it. They're fucking stupid.
No.
William just ate mashed potatoes for dinner.
Okay.
Instance. Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's the way I felt.
Damn it.
I did a bone-in ribeye pan technique.
Okay.
And then just, you know, I gave Becky mashed potatoes as a side because William had some instants left over. So, you know, a little bit of a, there's this basil pesto aioli that you can buy at Kroger, their special selection.
Okay.
You shoot a little bit of that on there just for something that is like, it works.
And this beautiful 2-inch chuck roast with this wonderful marbling and a nice layer of fat right down the middle of it.
Yeah.
But it looked more like a steak than a roast.
Oh, yeah.
And I had about a 2-pound. It was a Aldi's. It was marinated, but it was a brisket. Brisket. I did those two where I just chunked them and browned them. And then after I browned them, cut them into chunks and then marinated them for about 4 days. And then I reheated them really slow at like 175 for about an hour and a half. And then I've been chopping that up and eating that and making different dishes with it all week long. Mm. It's a wonderful life to live, the keto life by yourself when you're eating brisket and chuck roast steak all week. I've been making soups. I made a cauliflower rice Italian kind of beef stir fry that was fantastic, kind of like a curry spice profile.
Yeah,
it's freaking delicious.
We went to PF Chang's yesterday because Henry wanted.
We talked about that in last episode.
Wanted Chinese,
and you went PF Chang's, not Wings. I have to introduce you to Wings. It's not close, but
Well, we were in Columbus. It was on the way back. We should have gone there, but anyway. So Henry was introduced to lettuce wraps, which he liked, and pan-fried dumplings, which he liked, but guess who ate 4 of them?
The Luke Monster?
No, Lukey wasn't there. Maggie ate them. She was a pig. And so, Becky and I both got the Singapore street noodles.
Okay, that's a wheat noodle, I think?
No, it's a rice noodle. She was able to, but it was like a curry sauce, a curry tomato sauce.
Okay.
But it was very sharp and bitter. Just not good. And they had like little pieces of shrimp in there that were breaded and deep fried, which was not what you wanted. Then little bits of chicken nuggets that are deep fried. It's just like,
so they're trying to do like crispy bits of chicken.
Who the fuck knows what they're trying to do? And then they have big old slabs of red cabbage, which weren't edible. And then carrot strips. It was just a lousy dish. And flavor-wise, it was too bitter, too acidic. I don't know.
Like, you should have sent it back.
Like something that, say, Alison Krauss would make.
Stop it.
I'm just saying. It's all connected.
But it's like, you should have sent it back.
I made those Singapore noodles. They were delicious. Ah. Did you taste the sulfuric acid?
You'll never send something back, would you?
Well, it was bad. But it wasn't. It was just not a good dish. It was just, I won't ever order that again. Which, then there's not much left because the rest of it is just ridiculously expensive and not good. But, you know, whatever.
So, like, the lettuce wraps.
Those are good.
Wings.
Okay.
You get so much, and they don't call it that. They just call it diced chicken appetizer.
Because it's late and just call it something else, so yeah.
No, because, you know, you get the stainless steel platter that your entree comes out in?
Yeah.
That's filled with the minced diced chicken, piled high. Mm. You have to ask for more lettuce wrap because you get so much chicken with it. And it's like $8.99. I'm guessing you paid probably $18 for your lettuce wraps?
I don't know. No, it wasn't that much.
It's not $9.
I don't know what it was. I don't pay attention to prices. I'm rich. So, you know.
Oh, Jesus.
That's the way it is, man. Take it. Suck it. Suck a dick. That's what I think. Now, this Friday, I am going to Cut 132, the new steakhouse at Easton. And so, I will give a review next weekend about Cut 132.
I don't... What space is that in?
It's right across from the hardware, Restoration Hardware.
Oh. Yes. So it used to, the old...
I don't know what... I think it's a new building, so... They have roasted bone marrow. They have glazed pork belly. They have dried meatballs. They have beef carpaccio. They have crab bisque. It's kind of like, you know, Sophie's Choice as to what I'm going to actually get, but... The thing is, the classic cuts. And so I need, well, actually, some of our listeners are actually going with me, but that's okay. Folks, let me know. New York strip, or filet, or the ribeye, maybe. Wet aged, or the 24-ounce bone-in. It's dry aged. I don't know. Porterhouse, definitely not. Or maybe the tomahawk. Just eat it all by myself. Or the A7 Wagyu, which I'm not going to do because it's 6 ounces for $140. I don't know. I don't know. Right now, Scott, if I'm looking at this, you know what I'm leaning towards? I have no idea because I don't know. Probably the 16-ounce ribeye, but, you know. But maybe the 12-ounce filet. I don't know.
Cut 132 is where a loft
hotel's
at.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right near Weenie Wonder.
Weenie Wonder.
The Weenie Wonder.
Interesting. I have not looked at the wine menu. I don't know what they have wine-wise, but I will give you a full breakdown. If there is a Cut 132 in your area, you will know if it's bad or good because, you know, I won't lie to you, unlike Scott, who will lie to you.
Oh, Jesus.
He thinks Alison Krauss is talented. So, folks, we're going to take a break, but we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So, on tonight's potpourri, Scott, I'm going to ask a question.
What's your question, sir? I have all the answers.
What wine...
I don't recall.
...region / country typically disappoints you the most? You have high expectations for the wine, and then that country just lets you down.
Oakville.
That's Alison Krauss. So go ahead.
Oakville.
Yeah.
Oh,
kind of an idea. It's like
Argentina. Don't cry for me, Argentina.
You know the Chilean wines are better now.
100%.
It's just more of them.
Easy.
Well, La Postola is good.
Well, I think there's more Argentinian wines, but I think the Chilean wines in general. It's like, so for me, when it comes to South American wines, I think it's almost like Spanish wines. You know, when we were first doing the podcast, we talked about, look, you can't go wrong with a $10 or $12 Spanish wine. And I still think Spanish wines in general, there's just a level of quality that it's just there, even on the lowest end wines. I think with Argentinian wines, it's like, when was the last time we had a good one?
We don't drink them that often on the show.
There's a reason.
Well, no. I mean, there are...
We did a lot of them.
Catina, those are good.
Okay.
Alamos is not.
Okay.
El Enemigo is extremely good. We love El Enemigo.
Yes, once we learned how to say it right.
What's El Enemigo? But that's okay. But
the Chilean wines...
Well, we just drink more. First of all, availability-wise, Chilean wines are a little bit more, you know, accessible.
You think so? Yeah. I don't.
I also think, though, that Argentina, around here, from what we have for choice, is so dominated by Catena. That's what you see.
Yeah.
You know, and like La Postole, that's Chileans, but... Yeah, Catena it dominates so much. Through all the price points.
It's like, you know, Becky doesn't like to shame people now. She's more cultured than us, but she used to mock that person, mostly females. I just love an Argentinian Malbec. And that was Becky doing that, you know, mm-hmm. And she was right. Everybody thought they were so good, the Argentinian Malbecs, and they're just... Not
well. The same people would drink good. That at a trendy bar, and the wine would be at 78 degrees. You know,
it's fine. You know, Malbec's a fine varietal, but I'd much rather have it from France.
It's in a blend, yes. As the minority blend. I want 5% of it in a blend, but from
it's
France. Yeah.
Just it's
where it belongs.
I
sit down.
So that's my answer. So I throw it back at you, sir. Mm. The wines from what country are most likely to disappoint you?
That I get my hopes up, and then it just doesn't turn out. Well, probably it's probably the United States, but probably California. You know, The thing is, yeah, the United States, from what is available, has, in my opinion, the most spotty quality record. It just doesn't seem like wines that are as bad as some of the stuff we put out ever see the light of day in the United States from France, from Spain, from Italy. Australia is different, but everything that's bad shows up here. And I know there has to be wines that are bad in France, in Spain, in Italy. There are. We had some half bottle or some 187s recently that were bad, but you just don't see those wines. They don't migrate to us because
First of all, let me interrupt you. How dare you bring up the International Wine Challenge? You are going to pay a price for that.
That's a lot of wine.
It's coming back at you, sir.
What, are you going to give me like gonorrhea or something like that?
No.
Because I'm not going to partake in the activity that would cause it.
We got something for you. And I said we. That's right. We... You have something for you, sir.
You have
sir.
About as much planning as Bo does. Seriously.
We've got something for you.
I'll be waiting. But
I'll be waiting.
No, but California is the one place that they don't regulate enough, they don't have enough standards, and they allow factory-made wines.
It's not really just a California thing, it's an American thing.
Well, even if it's like something I never heard of.
We put out this shit.
Yeah,
there's two things. We put out this shit that's marketed and, you know, factory produced, and it's just, there's no concern for quality. They don't care. They just market it. And,
yeah.
You know, the Purple Death, the grape concentrate, it's awful. And then there's the other factor of taking any wine of substantive quantity and making these boutique wines that are $500 fucking dollars.
Yeah. Well, I can never trust the fact, it doesn't, unless I've had it before, that whatever I'm drinking will be good. It's always up in the air, especially in Cabernet, which that shouldn't be the case. Pinot Noir, I don't worry so much because I'm not going to drink something that is California Pinot Noir. But for Cabernet... The grandest of all wines, it is a fucking crapshoot sometimes.
Well, and I think it's just it's
even from it's legit winemakers.
Yeah, where you've had this before, you've had a different vintage before, and then it's like, can I still trust it?
Absolutely.
And
that's like
it's part of
Scott,
decision making and spending your money.
You had mentioned Josh. No, Josh is shit, but you were like, I would rather have Josh than X wine. And I said, well, I haven't had it recently. I can't say that. I know that it's bad, but I don't know how bad it is currently today. It was bad 5, 7, 8 years ago. How bad is it today? When it first came out, though, it's what we all recommended because it was pleasant, fruit forward. It wasn't mm-hmm. residual sugared up, but the Americans, for some reason, think that it's okay to take wine and pervert it. Well, you know, and make it more than it needs to be. You know what?
It's all about corporate America.
It's about accessibility.
Taking over and making, you know, what was maybe a wine that was produced at 5,000 cases, and we're going to produce 200,000 cases. We're going to homogenize everything down.
Yeah.
And every year it's going to taste the same every year, every year, every year, i.e. the Meiomi Pinot Noir experience, the Bud Light of wines. They get their $20 a bottle. I don't know what they've got in it, but you can guarantee it's one hell of a fucking profit margin. Well, and that's all they care about. And listen, if Meiomi's your thing, God bless you, because it is the Bud Light of wine.
If Meiomi's your thing, go fuck yourself.
No, it's fine. Come on. Like what you like.
By now, if you're listening to the show and you drink Meiomi regularly, really?
Listen, but if you're out at a restaurant, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah, you're going to get shitty.
But there's a lot worse wines out there. You just looked at a high-end restaurant wine menu, and it was shit.
It was bad.
And if Meiomi was on there, you would have to consider it based on what their wine list was.
No,
it was that bad.
I wouldn't do that.
Well, you'd have to go with Josh.
No, I would just take some drugs before I got there and be high.
Well, that's your life.
Yeah.
You know.
Then I wouldn't have to do that.
You'll take it when you get there.
It's just thinking outside of the box, man.
It's a good thing you taught Henry how to drive.
That's true. So.
No, it's that's it, and I get it. But, you know, thank God there's still great wine producers in this country that have some integrity.
It's all about integrity. It's, you know, wine should be associated with artistry. And if you disassociate that, and it's all about some sort of, you know, you homogenize milk.
We
milk should always taste the same. Wine, that is a product of artistry. That is a product of skill. That is a product of, it's a luxury product. It should be interesting. And you know what? If you need something that tastes the same every time, go fuck yourself. Drink fucking Bud Light like you want to. Mm. You know what? Be challenged. If you can't be challenged and you drink fucking Meiomi all the time, you know what? Go get your fucking Bud Light and enjoy it. Leave the wine to the people that actually drink wine. So, folks, we're going to take a break. I'm not going to let Scott, you know.
So angry.
You know what? They can go fuck themselves.
So angry.
Them and Alison Krauss. So, but we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So, the 2020 Michel Charlo Le Orme Barbera d'Asti in Italy from Piedmont, as per our listener's request. Well, I don't know what he was requesting specifically, but I believe it was. I'm drinking. Hey, you know. But I do believe it was Piedmont, so I do believe this qualifies under that. But this is one of many. You know what I bought, Scott?
What'd you buy, Rob?
In the wine vault, there is a Italian Grenache.
I love it.
It's different. You said meh on your text. So weird, though. An Italian Grenache. I'm going to find that. We're going to find that out. We're going to drink
that
some more.
That wasn't what I said mad to.
You did.
No, not
you're
the Italian
a dick.
Corona.
We are going to drink more Italian wines, though, because A, we like them. B, we've ignored them.
And then Italian Grenaches?
No, just Italian wines.
Okay.
But, you know, we've also, then, once we've drank those, we'll say, you know what, we ignored those damn Bordeaux's. We'll have to drink some more of those. We always ignore certain things, so, you know. We're just mean like that. So, Scott, this wine, this Barbera de Asti, how do you feel about this wine? What does your emotions tell you? I know your emotions normally take you to a dark place. Let's just stay out of that. Center yourself. Stay in the now.
It depends. I can, you know, I can be, I, you know, I was putting wine away in the in my wine storage unit last night, and a couple nights back, and Dave Matthews' song came on.
Oh, that's
and
unfortunate. Now we have Rihanna S&M. We know Wilford likes that.
I do. Did you know, Scott? And she said this. I've said this before. Whips and chains, or no, sticks and stones may break my bones, but whips and chains excite me. You know what? They do excite me. But when you get hit by a chain, that fucking hurts. So I think she needs to be more responsible in her performances and her singing, because she lets it think like if you get beaten down with a whip or a chain, it's sexually exciting. And theoretically, that's not true. I mean, I still get excited, but then I just get beat down harder. Always wear pants, folks. Don't be like me. Go ahead, Scott.
Anyway, I was getting emotional the other night, and my wife turned off the TV and had the Dave Matthews song on the phone, and just the line is right by your side.
You got emotional about Dave Matthews' song?
Well, Dave Matthews has some great songs. He has some great lyrics. He has some great boy-girl love song lyrics.
I can't. You know what, folks? When we started the Wine Vault, I said I wouldn't say certain things, and I'm not going to tonight, but off the air, I'm going to call Scott a name that you should never be heard, should never be said on the Wine Vault, ever. You can't listen.
You're not going
to
say,
I'm a man, and you're sitting there listening to Dave Matthews crying. That's when the man needs to run out,
Dave Matthews,
and hit you in the nuts with a wiffle ball bat.
It's crying because he's drunk again, but that's neither here nor there.
Jesus Christ.
I didn't say Dave Matthews was crying. I said I get emotional.
You got emotional.
I was thinking about my wife, and I was putting wine away. I said, honey, we need to listen to a song together.
She's like, get the pool done, fucking dumbass. That's what she was thinking.
No, she said, I don't remember this song.
No, I'm sure she didn't.
Well,
I don't remember the emotions that are attached to this song. When's the pool getting done, you fucking dumbass? Man, if I did that shit, Becky would never leave. I mean, I bought a vet, you know? At least it was there. It was broken, but it was there, man. You bought a pool, and it's not fucking there, man.
She signed off on it, too, so she's
oh
in with me.
Oh, my God. But you picked a douchebag.
No, he picked us.
No, he did not pick you. He's not like he was in your backyard and said, I need a family. And Sally, who's a good girl, Bubba, Sally's a good girl.
Sally is a good girl.
But she picked us. That was different. She was a cat and she was eating bread in our backyard.
I should have taken Sally when you offered her to me.
She really prefers us. She has a collar now.
She likes me.
With a bell.
She lets me carry around over my shoulder. She never lets you do that.
She sleeps on me every time she gets a chance. It's ridiculous.
It's because you stink.
No, Henry stinks. He smells like B.O. He's really gross.
Well,
he's like, I put deodorant on. I went, not enough.
Wonder where he got that from.
Yeah, I mean, I put on deodorant. There's certain brands I don't buy, man. Mitchum is a good brand. But Old Spice, no, not a good brand. It's the Allison Crow of deodorants because it's acidic and it burns your armpits. So.
Oh, it does not.
It does me. I've never liked that stuff. You just buy Mitchum, man. That's a strong.
Such a baby.
That's a strong deodorant. Dries out your armpits. They all get all flaky and shit. You're like, oh, I can't put my arms down. Yep. But do you smell BO? Nope. Then it's working. So go ahead, Scott. What's your score?
Highly recommend this wine. $17. What a value.
It's a lovely wine.
Everything that the review said it would be. I'm at 90 of my points.
90 of your
points? 90. I think it's a solid 90. I love this as everything that a DOCG Italian wine should be. It's Asti de Barbera. It's beautiful.
It's Barbera de Asti. Yeah, you got that inverted. You're a little dyslexic there.
That's a little dyslexia thing coming in. Sorry, folks.
It's Barbera de
Asti. It's wonderful. Yeah, 90 of my points. I couldn't recommend this wine higher. This is why we do this show. I'm glad that our listener said, let's look at some Italian wines, and Rob picked this up, and freaking a beauty, man.
Mm-hmm. It is a beauty.
And this is one I'm going to go back to, right?
I would buy this again.
I would buy this by the multiples to have for when I want to have red sauce.
Yeah. And I enjoy this wine greatly, folks. I think it's a lovely representation of Barbera. It's almost a standard bearer of what Barbera should be. I'm going to give it 88 of my points. Scott's getting emotional. But Barbera, in its basic sense, isn't the most complex wine. It isn't. It's not intended to be. And so when we start talking about 90s, I'm judging everything against each other. If I'm saying, as a Barbera, it's a 90-point Barbera, but I have to then take it out of the fact that Barbera isn't quite necessarily as grand as Cabernet or Pinot Noir.
This is where Rob's going to make that comment that Barbera is only capable of so many points.
It is. But it is a great Barbera. Really great Barbera. But as a wine, I give it 88 points. I recommend it highly. It's a lovely thing to drink. It really is, and it gets better as it just sits and opens. And I wish I had, you know, we've already drank the canner's dry. Yeah. And that's always, you know, that's the thing. Is the decanter dry before the episode is done? We've had plenty of wines where, nope, it wasn't.
Or wine's getting poured back into the decanter.
Or I took medication after, because I went out, we did the Kirkland Signature Series, Oakville Cabernet. I'm sure you're probably aware of that by now. Allison Crowe is responsible for that. And I went upstairs. Scott didn't know what I took, but I took drugs. I took a Zyrtec, and I took 3 ibuprofen, because I can feel that I was having an allergic reaction to that wine.
Well, no wonder you're only scoring this in 88. You can't taste the wine because you're taking drugs.
I'm fine now. I like this wine.
No, you're not fine.
I like this wine, folks. And quite frankly, rely on that 88. Rely on that 90. It's an 88 to 90. Because I think that if you really value Barbera in a higher sense than I do, then it's a 90. But I don't have a problem with your 90.
What are you saying?
If you like Barbera a lot more.
Your score's your score. It's
I don't have a problem with your 90. You like it a lot. I like it a lot. You like it as a 90, I like it as an 88.
Good.
So, you know, but it's an 88 to 90, and I don't disagree with Scott's 90. I can see, especially the je ne sais quoi of just the fact that we don't drink these wines very often, in a sense could skew him to a higher score than he should, but that's okay. No. In reality, I'm glad that you scored it a 90, because it does deserve it's somewhere in that range. And you know what? 89 is an aggregate score. It's a good score.
It's
a good wine.
Deserves a number that starts with a 9 because of you used the wrong language, but it has that thing anyway.
What's
that
my
je ne sais quoi? It has that. It has that thing.
Well, I think it's
elevated. It's an elevated wine. Is it a 92? Is it a 94? No, but I get why. I get that score.
No.
This is
an excellent. Excellent Barbera de Asti in its basic sense. And the highest I'm ever going to give a basic sense Barbera de Asti is 88. You'd say, why not 85? Because it's way better than that. Because this really is the best version of a standard Barbera. But that's what it is. It doesn't ascend higher than that, because it's their entry level wine. I'm assuming their $28 wine, that might be that 90-91, because it's going to have probably a lot more earthy elements, a lot more herbal elements. It's going to be a lot more complex. This wine isn't necessarily complex.
Oh yeah, it is.
It's not that complex.
Well, but listen, it's complex. It has a level of complexity that surprised us.
It has a level of clarity. It's well-defined. It's a well-defined wine and a well-sorted-out wine and a well-balanced wine. These are all very, very true.
Minerality that we said we're not going to expect in
it's
all
It's not wildly complex, but the elements that it has, it does display in a very, very clear, accurate sense. And I appreciate that. And I think that 88 to 90, highly recommended, great wine.
He hates Italian wines, folks.
No, just bravo.
He doesn't appreciate
it. So, folks.
He doesn't appreciate Italian wines.
No, I'm not a shill. I didn't cream my pants when I drank Italian wines. But that's okay. For Rob the Wine Guy.
He still roots for Mussolini.
Well, you know, he was misunderstood, I guess. According to the Triple B has said that. I don't know what that's all about, but for Rob the Wine Guy, Scott the Licensed Taxi Driver, we're going to bid you adieu, but we will see you next time here on the Wine Vault. Good night.